Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad you're with us today. Also with us today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Fired up. Fired up.
You certainly are.
Let's go.
All right. We're going to go. I would like to start by talking a little bit about something we heard just this morning from Sundar Pichai. I apologize if I'm saying his name incorrectly. About how privacy should not be a luxury good. Wasn't that how he put it? It's not something that you should have to... privacy cannot be a luxury good, he said. He wrote this piece in the New York Times about how Google's mission is to create products that are universally accessible and useful. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go.
Yeah.
So, nonsense. So, first of all, he's right.
Lay it out, Brian. Lay it out. I'll let you get it out.
He's right.
Brian, lay out your argument. Privacy, I'm going to make popcorn.
Try. Privacy should not be a luxury good. Companies like Google are making it a luxury good. His point that he thinks he's so cleverly making is that Apple's products are expensive. He's essentially acknowledging that Apple provides privacy to its customers through its devices, at least. Right? He's essentially acknowledging that, and then he's being critical because Apple is not affordable by vast swaths of the world, which is certainly true. But Apple would not be the sole provider of luxury, this luxury of privacy, if companies like Google weren't busily enabling and constructing this heinous world of surveillance capitalism all around the gosh darn world. The gall of this person, it infuriates me.
My estimation of the man went way down all of a sudden. It's defensive. It's whiny. Misses the point.
And he's basically making the case that it's completely okay to have this world of surveillance capitalism because it provides for all of these services. These things are true, but it completely glosses entirely over the concept of whether it's great that that a corporation has all of this information on us. Like for most since the book 1984, which I am entirely coincidentally reading, also I'm ashamed to say for the very first time, since that book, the issue really has been privacy from the government, right? That's been sort of this battle that we've been fighting, theoretically fighting at least, and to one degree or another, is whether or not the government should be snooping on us. Well, what's happened is that corporations are now doing the snooping, and how that's any better than the government doing the snooping, whatever the government may be to you, is utterly beyond me. And he completely glosses right over that foundational aspect of what they do is snoop on our lives. They pillage it. They reap information from us, and they sell access to us to the highest bidder. So this punk can try to take his high horse all he wants, and he's going to fall off a freaking cliff.
So the thing that stood out to me in this article. Yes. I'm with you there. Bravo.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a little tense about that.
Part of the way through the article, he says, last week we announced significant new privacy features. So it's good. Everybody can trust Google. Everybody knows that it's not going to mine your inbox for information. It's not going to take all that location data that you give it when you use Waze. It's not going to take all that Google Maps information. It's not going to take all your Google search history. And not anymore, because last week they announced new features. Like, here's the thing. I think, unfortunately, I think this is working for him, because we wouldn't be talking about the op-ed that he wrote in the New York Times if he hadn't taken a swipe at Apple. So it feels a little clickbaity. But at the same time, people who don't know are going to be out there talking about this like, oh, well, Google says privacy is important. Well, yeah, they're saying it. They've always said it. They also always said, don't be evil. But here we are.
He doesn't want to get Facebooked.
Right. He's
desperately trying to avoid government interference with his business.
Well, he's also
announcing new privacy initiatives that look good to the government.
He's also clearly Apple's stance that privacy should be a right.
Mm-hmm.
And
a human Apple's right, I believe, is how Tim Cook put it.
Human right, yeah. And Tim Cook's continued swipes at both Facebook and Google, if not by name.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Clearly, he's feeling on the defensive. I think John called him defensive at the very beginning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the president of Suzuki Motor Company saying, luxury and performance shouldn't be the sole purveyor of by Audi and Porsche.
Well,
right.
When also, fact, yeah, keep going.
People who build quality products charge quality price. Apple builds great products, charges a premium price for a quality product. And because they do that, they have enough money. They don't have to sell your privacy to the interested parties. Mm-hmm. That's the elephant in the room that Sundar is avoiding.
If the entire rest of the tech world wasn't predicated on the notion of making us the product, mm-hmm. Apple would never have had a reason or market opportunity to take this stance on privacy that it's taken.
Well, I look at it the reverse way. Apple for years has had a good character about its business, and that has proven to pay off in the long run. Meanwhile, other companies ignored that quality of business by Apple and went down a different path, and now they're paying the price.
Well, they're not paying a price yet. It's conceivable that they'll pay a price.
Well, I think there's a big government action against Facebook going on, isn't there?
Well, there's an EU investigation. No. There's nothing here at the moment that we've seen.
I'd put it at like 10% chance that there will ever be real regulation, even in the EU, which takes consumer rights far more seriously than the United States does.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're feeling the heat in any case.
They are feeling the heat. Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Yes.
Matter of fact, I would say it's more likely, especially in the EU or maybe even especially in England, that laws would be passed granting the government access to that corporate data before they would ever protect consumers. I don't think Facebook or Google, no one has paid a price yet for making us the product.
Mm-hmm.
Internet has made that data too valuable. The cat's out of the bag.
Well, and
horse out of the barn.
Well, and
Starship out of a warp drive.
I think for me, part of what makes this aggravating is the part where he reels in that, like, for everyone is a core philosophy for Google. It's built into our mission, blah, 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 blah. And then talks about the experience on low-cost phones they care just as much about as the experience on high-end phones. And that
is true.
But that doesn't have anything to do with privacy, which is the thing he's supposed to be talking about. The title of the article is Privacy Should Not Be a Luxury Good. So I never doubted you were giving people on inexpensive phones running Android a different experience. Like, I always thought it was the same experience no matter how much you paid for your phone, because you were paying for other stuff. You weren't paying for Android to be different by buying a nicer phone. It's just like iOS in that way. Like, whatever phone you buy, if it runs iOS, that's what it runs. Whatever phone you buy, if it runs Android, it runs the flavor you get from that manufacturer, but it's not necessarily a fundamentally different experience. And I have, yeah, again, he talks about how important it is to Google and points out that the way you can tell it's so important is because last week they did a bunch of stuff that made it seem like they care about privacy. It's shenanigans at best. I call shenanigans.
So that they can supply documents to the government.
That was a line item, and he didn't make his argument. That's not how he made his argument. He's including that as ways in which Google is continuing to take privacy seriously. I don't agree with that argument, but I take exception to the way you're characterizing it, Kelly.
Yeah. I just thought it was an interesting thing. Like, look at all the stuff we're doing. Look at what we, just did. And, the other thing that I would point out is that, isn't it interesting? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I think it's interesting that this dropped in the New York Times right in the middle of Google I.O., which is the...
Well, I'm sure that's by design. What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they want everybody to pay attention to how much privacy they're caring about. But I haven't heard anything about privacy out of the Google I/O stuff that I've read so far. So it doesn't seem, I don't know, it doesn't seem like, it seems like a little bit of a publicity stunt, basically, to come out and be like, oh, but wait, we care about privacy, too. It's like, look at me, I'm still pretty. It's very much, I don't dig it. And I feel like there are some fundamental issues with his argument. And most of that is what you expressed right at the beginning, Brian. So
I think the other part of the equation is that Tim Cook has the ear of the president. Tim Cook has been informative, cooperative, team player.
Yeah, but there's no chance that the administration cares about this issue.
No.
Well, Tim Cook has been calling for regulation, and
right.
Yeah, but this administration is not going to get on that train.
No. And
so I mean, John, what you said may well be correct, but I don't think it's going to factor into this.
I just think it's creating a bit of defensiveness that's exhibited in this editorial as well.
Well, I think part of why it's defensive is because this is a fundamentally different business than Apple. Yes, they make hardware. Yes, they make software. I understand that.
Their competitor is going to participate in continuing the discussion and helping the government with the thoughts about how to enforce consumer privacy without losing access to the data, as you guys mentioned. And I think that's got Facebook and Google freaked.
But I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And I think part of the reason that I don't think you can necessarily paint Apple with the same brush is that what I give Apple is transactional. Like, I give them credit card information so I can buy things. I give them, they don't have a lot of information. It's not like all of the bits and pieces of my day and places that I check in on Facebook, or all of the email traffic that goes through Gmail servers that have advertisements in the side because Google has access to all the mail in my inbox.
I know. And that has put Apple into a strong position that's creating problems for their competitors.
Right. But that's part of the issue is that I don't think they, I don't think it's quite the same thing. So that's all it is. And I think that, sometimes that gets lost in the conversation. Because there's not a truckload of personal data that Apple has about me. I went and downloaded it and looked at it, and most of it's really boring.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's where that's coming from. So the other thing I wanted to talk about today was, and this is going to be an odd question, but has Apple lost its magic?
John Martellaro thinks so. He wrote a piece where he completely agreed with this person who said that.
Yes,
I did. I'm fighting words, Brian.
Yeah. Well, this was in your particle debris column from Friday.
Friday, yeah.
And you basically said, look at this article. And like, my only complaint about this article is that he didn't also drag iTunes under the bus. So I took that as you agreeing with him.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then you were like admiring his chutzpah.
I put in bold. It's an interesting article. I put in bold. It will irritate you. It will provoke you. It will make you think. All
right. And I immediately went down the path of actually talking about this, the writing. I don't actually want to talk about this other guy's column, but the topic of whether or not Apple has lost its magic is an interesting topic.
Yeah. Do we get excited when the next Mac comes out and we're all enthusiastic and we dream about it and fantasize about it? It's hard enough just to get Apple to ship a new Mac, let alone be enthusiastic about it. When they ship an iMac with coffee light processors 9 months late, when they go 6 years between the Mac Pros, when they have keyboard issues and won't fess up to it, it's hard to get excited about Apple product in that sense.
Well, you know, I mean, like, how different is having keyboard issues and then not owning up to it? How different from that is the days when I think everyone did think of Apple as being magical and Steve Jobs saying that you're holding it wrong when it came to Intentigate? I mean, like, that one particular element, Apple not acknowledging a problem, I think that's been a part of Apple's DNA since Steve came back, for sure. Mm-hmm. And including at a time when we did feel that Apple was still magical.
Who needs a stylus? Yeah, you have 10.
That's a good point. But I think we have to look at the weight of the experience instead of pointing out individual instances that seem to have the weight of old equal to the weight of the new. You know what I mean?
Kind of like, come on, man. You're killing me here. This is what this guy did. This is what this guy did in this article. It's exactly what he did. And you've been like, okay.
All right. We're not talking about the article. We're not talking about Apple lost its magic. I don't know.
I don't think Apple,
I get pretty excited about new phones every September.
I think that Apple doesn't care about the things that we care about in its business. I don't think that Apple cares about Macs. The three of us care about Macs.
Yes.
Most of the people listening to the show probably care about Macs, mm-hmm. right? The name of our site is The Mac Observer. Now, admittedly, we are much, much broader than The Mac Observer anymore, but we've also been publishing for more than 20 years, mm-hmm. back when that's all Apple did. But my point is that we certainly do still care about the Mac, and I don't think Apple cares about the Mac anymore. When it comes to Macs, Apple has lost its magic.
It's not just the Mac. There's little things like the Apple TV remote that Apple won't fix. Kelly clued me into this really nice case for the Apple TV remote that makes it easier to hold, helps you get it oriented correctly.
Doesn't make it any easier to use.
Yes, it does. It's night and day for me.
Huh. All right, well,
it makes it so that when you pick it up, it's right side up the first time around, and it's still easy to navigate everything.
But that's seldom my issue with it. Yeah. It's like rewinding and and fast forwarding on the Apple remote is terrible. But the Apple TV remote stunk back when Apple was still magical. Mm-hmm. So that hasn't changed either. Well, the Apple TV remote has never been good.
So did the hockey puck mouse on the original iMac.
I would call today's mouse magical compared to the hockey puck.
Yeah,
the Magic Mouse.
Even though you have to charge it on the bottom,
I can't use it because it doesn't respond to my finger the way I need it to.
Yeah, well, lots of people do use it though.
Yeah, but I'm not real excited about the Magical Mouse.
So, John, that tells me that you are one of the people who's going to say "not for me" is the same as "not for everyone," because you're not going to give credit for the Magic Mouse because you can't use it.
I'm just saying that it's possible, as you talked about in the pre-show, to make a very long list of things that are irritating that Apple just refuses to fix.
Well, but like okay, iTunes. So that's one of the things. Well,
finally, they're fixing iTunes after, what, 5 years, 6 years?
That's true.
I'll believe it when I see it. Wood chipper. sorry. I have a bad reaction to talking about iTunes. But like, John, you were saying, like, you know, you don't think the magic mouse is necessarily magical because it doesn't work for you. It doesn't give you the magic that it should. And the reason I point that out is because one of the things that this guy wrote about in the article was,
we're not talking about that.
No, I'm using one example. He said AR isn't magical, and I completely disagree. So just because there are things that aren't necessarily for you, we have this topic, we talk about this regularly. Just because it's not for you doesn't mean it's not for everybody. I know lots of people who like use the app to put furniture in your living room and see what it's like.
Don't try to pin me down like that. Just because I make a comment about a particular product that is making, that I have read and the consensus is that this product needs fixed, like iTunes or the TV, Apple TV remote, doesn't mean that I'm being so idiosyncratic that I'm the only one who feels that way. I'm standing up for myself.
No,
so don't try to pigeonhole me on
No, I'm making a point. And because there are a lot of people who would dismiss it entirely for that reason. I know a bunch of other people, again, plural of anecdote is not data. I feel like I have to say that every time I say something like this. But there are a load of people who also think the magic mouse is the opposite of a magical experience because you have to charge it by setting it on its side and plugging the cable right smack into the center bottom of the mouse. So it is absolutely unusable if it needs a charge. And I would argue that's exactly what makes it a non-magical experience, because if it dies or if the battery is low, you are immobile until it's usably charged again. That seems not great. So I think in some cases there are valid reasons for saying something like that, but I think like it doesn't work for me, you know, like the people who have ears that are incompatible with iPods, right? Or AirPods, I mean. Like, for the people they fall out for, it's not magical for that person. But for a whole lot of people, it totally is. And I think that sometimes that's the thing that gets lost. And anybody can make a list of stuff about Apple they don't like. I can, Brian can, John can. Maybe they would even have some overlap. But by and large, like, I still think there's a whole lot there that is new and interesting and useful and magical.
The bigger question is, why is this happening? It's happening because Apple's a much bigger corporation than they used to be.
Right. And that involves a lot more people
worldwide.
Yeah, more people use their stuff. And that means more different kinds of people are using their stuff. And that means that there's always going to be a segment of people who can't whatever their whatever because reasons.
I think it's
there's product design and then there's product support.
I think there's a much, much bigger issue at the center
and that
of
is?
The things that we are whining about, like that, like, and I absolutely whine about the state of the Mac. I absolutely whine about it taking sometimes years to update Mac. It's insane. It's completely insane. Mm-hmm. And there's two aspects of
this. We're letting the Apple display linger on for years after it was obsolete and became really
expensive. Or getting out of the airport business. I mean, like, the thing, and I started on this earlier, Apple isn't focused on the things that we care about the most. And that's because Apple is focused on, I believe, in big picture, world-changing stuff, and they don't really care about these formerly core products anymore. Mm-hmm. They care about iPhone. They care about the App Store. They care about services. They don't care about the Mac. They also care about the medical stuff that they haven't launched yet. Mm-hmm. They also care about whatever they're going to do in the automobile space. They also care a whole lot about a bunch of stuff with AR that we haven't seen yet. And they're so focused on these big, probably world-changing things. That's and that's certainly an article of faith for me. We don't have any evidence yet. And but I do have that faith. And those are the things they care about. And in addition to that, Tim Cook isn't a product guy. Steve Jobs, the guy who picked Tim Cook to succeed him, once warned us about putting non-product people in charge of a product company. So you get, but at the same time, Tim Cook does have this vision of making Apple this company that is 1,000 times bigger than the company that Apple led.
Big companies have big ambitions. Small companies have small ambitions. Apple has big ambitions. Stuff drops through the cracks.
Yeah, and so big. The shame about that is that, I'm channeling John Keat here. He talked about this a long time ago. He's said that Apple should hire B teamers to iterate Macs.
Okay.
Right. It doesn't take, like, if the top executives don't have the time to focus on the Mac, hire some people who can and let them deal with it.
I like that idea. I'd like to see what they come up with. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be fun.
Then you'd have people who had autonomy and would be outside the direct control.
They can report to someone who reports to the executive team. That's fine. It's fine. Like the Mac doesn't need to be.
Well, I think Tim Cook and Jonathan Ive are very careful about control and about who gets to say what's the design. And they'd rather not do anything at all than give somebody else control.
Well, but there's a difference between I'm going to add a new thing or I'm going to make it look different or I'm going to redesign the case or the motherboard or whatever. And there's I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure that it will be compatible with the latest iteration of the processor it uses now, because I know that more are coming. Like, there's a huge difference between keeping it current and iterating a design or iterating a model. Like, I feel like you could definitely have a nice deep bench on that design front and have everything hum along and make people like Brian really happy because there'd be a new Mac more than once in a great while.
Yeah, but then it's always possible I would whine because they weren't as awesome as they used to be. So
well, let the starters, right, if this were sports, let the starters work on how to make the computer thinner or add a touch bar or build a keyboard that works. I know that's revolutionary. And do some of those kinds of things and then have the bench that's in the back. Like, I know there's a new iteration of a Coffee Lake processor. I know there's a new iteration of this, and I'm going to make sure that the existing product line we have will all run on that new processor. There's nothing dramatically different I have to do to a case to generally make something like that work. So that seems like a reasonable thing to be able to do. So thanks for the idea, John. I think it's a good one.
Will Apple be considered magical if they come out with A-series processors in the Macs?
At this point, yes.
Would that be greeted as magical?
If it outperforms Intel, yeah, that would actually be that would be legit, straight up magical.
That would.
I'm getting a lot of pushback on the article I published, the link I published the other day. Some people think it's going to be great, and some people are saying, you know, x86 is the thing, x86 is the standard, x86 instruction set is where we live and breathe.
It is.
For Apple to go off in left field is a mistake.
Yeah, God, we hear that every time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is until it isn't. Because we had the exact same conversation when we went from...
What they're worried about is Apple's ability to run Windows code and Linux code on a Mac that has an A-series processor.
Yeah, whatever.
They're worried that Apple won't implement virtual machine language. They won't implement an instruction set translator.
Yeah, because Apple's never done any of that kind of stuff before that allowed you to run a previous iteration of the operating system on the new and improved hardware that Apple has come up with. Well, that's never happened in the history of Apple.
The readers is they went through hell through that and they don't want to go through that again.
Well, you don't have to if you don't keep upgrading your operating system past the point where all the emulation breaks. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. We definitely need to talk more about A-series. I think there's a whole bunch there that we need to discuss. If you have opinions out there, listeners, about Apple's magic and what its current amounts are, you can always get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com. You can leave comments on the show notes, and you can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. John, thanks for coming by today.
My pleasure.
I always like when you're super invested in something that we want to talk about. Brian, thank you for coming and effectively breaking down the Google article from this morning. I'm glad you were with us.
I'm going to coin M series. Apple's going to call it the M series of processors. Calling it right here.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
Okay. M series processors? All right.
Yep.
Okay. I'm with
for
it.
Mac.
Sounds good. I like it. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. This has been the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.